The first question comes from the line of Nemes Mata with UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation and for taking my questions. I have three of them. The first one is on slide eight, and just wanted to confirm what Pascal mentioned. The 130 basis points increase in pricing in personal loans and 140 basis points in autos. Could you just confirm that is essentially you saying that front book yield is going up by around 130 basis points? And that's as of June, so that was not necessarily the case in the first 4 to 5 months in the year. And in this context, I was wondering if you could talk about the market dynamics in personal loans as well. You grew receivables by about 1%, the market did plus 5%. So I'm just wondering, is that due to your focus on repricing, maybe also selective repricing before the rate cap moved higher, and also keeping loss rate below historical levels, or is there any clear reason for that? So that's the first one. The second one is on the 15% ROE target for next year. You mentioned that this might be challenging to reach. Could you elaborate a little bit on where exactly you see the key risk to reaching these targets? Is that volume development? Is that funding costs? Or this is mainly related to risks around the credit card transition, where you're seeing perhaps some slippage in fees? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the questions, Martin. So let me just Pascal, perhaps you start with the numbers on the pricing, and then I take the market dynamics as well as the outlook question.
So yes, Mate, you are right. Although this is on the new business, and this is basically as though comparing as though the June pricing versus the June last year. So that means, as you said, as though that obviously the pricing increase was lower the month before. So again, as though it's comparing as though June last year with June as of this year, 1 month of vintage during that period. Second one.
Yeah. Thanks, Pascal. Look, I think Matt, you're on the right track in terms of the market dynamics, right? There is growth in the market, but look, we want to stay true to our principles here, right? We do want to grow profitably. We do not want to grow share at the expense of margin, and so we've been very selective in terms of where we grow, both from a pricing but also from a overall, let's say, loss and risk management perspective. And so that's what you're seeing here. I think, you know, again, we're quite thoughtful about this. That's the dynamics in terms of that situation. Your last question about the RE target. Look, I think it's really around these couple of headwinds that I alluded to, right? I mean, one is the somewhat of the lag of the repricing coming in. The good news here is, right, we have increased prices and we continue to work on that as we stand today. And depending on the interest rate development in the market, we'll continue doing that going forward, right? We've been quite clear and assertive in that. And so we will see the benefits coming through, but there is a bit of a lag that's going to drag as well a bit into 24. And then, as we alluded to with the shifting of some of the benefits on the transformation, a lot of the projects are going right to plan. Some of them are, you know, versus the initial strategy we put together in 21, shifting a bit back. And so the benefits will come, but again, a bit of a timing lag here. That's really the key items that we see, Martin.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Regli Daniel with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. First, four questions, if I may. So first, on credit cards, secondly, on the net interest margins, then third, on costs, and then fourth, on a little bit of follow-up on Mate's question on the return on equity target. So first, on credit cards, can you maybe give me some more color on the trends we have seen in H1 2023? Obviously, credit card commissions are down. And can you maybe elaborate a bit on how this kind of fits with, you know, seeing record passenger numbers on Airport Zurich and so on. I would have expected, you know, credit card commissions to have been rather up than down, given, you know, the normalization of the whole COVID and traveling behavior. Then secondly, on net interest margins, you said there will be, or we have seen this compression to 5.1%, and then should see a stable net interest margin of 5.1% during 2023. And from when on can we expect, you know, kind of a recovery coming from this, you know, price increases you're talking about? And to where would this recovery go? Should it go back to kind of 5.5, or will we see something in the middle of where we stand now and maybe the point we started? Then quickly on the one-off costs, can you maybe just quantify a little bit more specifically what exactly was the operational excellence spent and what was the integration costs, or what was the kind of the non-recurring part of the operating expense line? And then last but not least, on the return on equity target, you obviously kind of softened a bit the guidance on return on equity. And I was just wondering what was the unexpected part, you know, that you kind of lower a bit the guidance both for this and for next year. Thanks.
Morning, Daniel. Thanks for the question. So let me take the first one, and then Pascal, the net interest margin and the one-off cost, and I'll come back on the ROE if that works. So look, I think couple things on cards, Daniel, right? I mean, firstly, you know, as we said, what we're seeing in terms of the numbers, you know, as we had also articulated a year and a half ago, is that we are broadly in line with the expectations around assets and revenues. And so I think that's, you know, that gives us some comfort that what we've done, what we've implemented, and how we've delivered on the transition is going towards these expectations. Secondly, right, a sub-point to that, right, the migration at 60% where we stand today, or 60, and we continue to work this, by the way, right, again, we said we want to retain more than half. We're clearly firmly in that territory. And we're also seeing the assets quite stable with interest income increasing, right? And so, again, I think a lot of the work in that sense is paying off and confirming our expectations. Now, in terms of fees, it's true there's pressure relative to previous year. You know, look, to some extent, right, we've always said on the transition of the portfolio, we want to retain the majority of the customers, and we're focusing on profitability, and that gets us in line with expectations. But clearly, you know, there are also some that use different cards or use them a bit differently than in the past. So, you know, this is where our activities that we're driving today and going forward come in, right, which means continued transition, continued migration. We've got activities that are ongoing in terms of driving activity on the cards, spend stimulation, you know, working with existing partners, and also, you know, as you know, we always have a pipeline of potential new partners that we're working on. So that's how I would talk about the card story at this point. And let me just hand over to Pascal for the following two questions.
Yep, thank you. On the net interest margin, as you have seen, so there is this timing lag between the P&L impact of the repricing actions, which have already been implemented, and the increased interest expense. And as a result, so as I showed before, the net interest margin reduced from 5.5 to 5.1. So first, so for 2023, as I mentioned, so we expect this to be stabilized because of the measures already implemented. And we would expect the net interest margin to slightly increase again as in the midterm. And by the way, as if you look at our overall strategic plan and what we communicated, as we were expecting some reductions in our overall strategic plan of the net interest margin. So this is why today we can confirm again our midterm financial targets. On the OPEX, so first related to the integrations of Bijunor, so when we did the acquisitions and we announced, so we reported integrations of around 4 to 5 million to be spent between 2022 and 2023. So the first one is, I want to confirm again this number. It's around 4 to 5 million. And we spent OPEX, around 2 million for the first 6 months of the year. In terms of integration, or not in terms of integration, in terms of strategic investments, I mentioned before, we have spent OPEX and CAPEX around 11 million for the first 6 months. I reported last year around 13 million spent. So if you take 13 million last year plus 11 million, rounded around 25 million already spent as those strategic initiatives, OPEX, CAPEX, out of the overall 55 million strategic funding investments or funding for strategic investments announced. So 25 out of 55 already spent after 18 months. And out of the 11 million I mentioned for this year, usually, as we would expect, OPEX, CAPEX, around 60% OPEX and around 40% CAPEX for this kind of initiatives.
Yep. Thanks, Pascal. So let me take over again on the ROE point. So look, Daniel, I mean, I think it's, so again, two key things, right? It's the lag and the repricing. And look, you know, we'll have to see where the interest rate increases by the National Bank and resulting funding plays out, right? It's likely in a sense that it'll be peaking at some point, but it's also, as I think we all know, anybody's guess, right? I think what's important to note is that we have increased prices. We are increasing prices. I think we have proven that we are assertive, we're delivering on this, and so wherever that takes us from a market perspective going forward, we'll continue to do so. But again, given some of this lag, you know, this is not purely periodic, right? There's some spillover into next year, and that creates part of the challenge for the ROE. And then the other piece, like I said, you know, we laid out a pretty granular plan, right, that we communicated to you guys in December of 21 in terms of the programs that we're driving. We're delivering on these, as we've said today, right, whether that's the Mobile First app, whether that's data center move, a lot of the network consolidation and those programs you will recall, and also the transformation of the core banking system. The phasing of some of this, the core banking system as example, is a bit delayed versus what we had initially planned. And so, again, those two things, I think, create some of the challenges that we're seeing. But again, we're confirming the targets that we set, and we're working on delivering against them.
Okay, thanks. Can I ask two quick follow-ups, if I may? So quickly on this 60% migration, means this 60% of previous Migro customers have already ordered and gotten and used the new Certo card. Is this the correct interpretation of this? And secondly, just a little bit about, you know, the client behavior. So you were talking about, you know, clients have changed the usage of their cards. So are they using the cards less often, or don't you see the recovery in, you know, the kind of traveling part of the commission income? Or
Danny, look, thanks for the follow-up. Let me just take this. Look, you're right with the migration, right? The 60% of the customers have been migrated, so they have a card and they're using the card. And as I said, we will continue this migration. But as we've also said, right, we focused on the most profitable segments to start with, which is why, again, you're also seeing at the 60%, we're confirming the guidance that we had provided in terms of 2019 asset and revenue levels. And the fact that the assets are sticky, I think, underlines and confirms that hypothesis that we've worked on with our migration program. We'll continue to drive that, and so, you know, I expect that number to continue to increase, but at a somewhat lower pace going forward. Look, client behavior, I mean, look, there's, if you're at 60, then there's 40% on the other side, right? And they're partially still in the portfolio. We continue to work on these clients. But the proposition there is a bit different, right? Some of them may be on a Migo card, maybe in other programs. So it's not as easy to, I'd say, distill this on a case-by-case basis, Daniel. What we are seeing, that of the customers that we are retaining, as I said, the behavior is broadly as we want it to be, right? This is hence the stickiness of the assets in that respect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Venditti Andreas with Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. From my side, just a few add-ons. Maybe you could give an indication in terms of funding costs, what we could expect for the full year. And then coming back on the cost-income ratio, you reiterated your guidance for a stable cost-income ratio for the full year, despite a higher one in the first half. I think that's obviously positive. If I look through the numbers, basically it means that in the second half you would have to reach the best level of cost-income ratio over the last 4.5 years, mainly through the cost side you mentioned. So what should we expect there in terms of this cost side improvement, or where should this improvement come from? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Andreas, for the questions. Pascal, you want to take those?
Yeah. So first of all, on the funding side, though, you know the situation at the beginning of the year. We had 6.1 billion of funding, 2.1 years durations, and we know also the interest rate development since June last year. The average funding cost was 97 bips in the first 6 months, and I would expect towards some point for 2023 close to the year-end period, where we were at 125, just to be 100% sure. On the slides, yes, 125, so slightly lower probably as an average, so funding costs for the full year 2023. This is what we would expect. I think one again, although I want to reiterate, although we should not look at the interest expense only in isolations, but also compare with repricing actions, and ultimately as though looking at the net interest margin development, depending on how interest rates develop in the next couple of months, forward rates, we might have to take more or less actions on additional repricing actions. On the cost-income ratio, so you are right, if we are at 53, we say stable, as last year was around 51%, 50.6%, so second half of the year needs to be at lower than 50%. First, we have always demonstrated a very disciplined approach around cost management, although in personal calls, in general and administration's cost. An example, as a number of FTEs, if you look at the reduce excluding acquisitions, 934, 916, 904. So first, although is the usual normal cost income management, and we are very tightening this. Then the second one is, I mentioned before, we discussed before, the integrations cost. Although I would say a large part of the integrations of Byjuno is done, so we wouldn't expect this cost to recur the same way we have seen at H1. And finally, yes, we start to expect some initial benefits out of the transformations we have started now 18 months ago. We have already implemented quite a few things, also in terms of workplace, in terms of infrastructure, and then as soon as we will have basically the launch of the new core banking platform, we would expect to start to see first benefits already as well in 2023. I want to reiterate firmly as well that our we ambition so to have a stable as a cost income ratio from 2023, and then as well starting 2024 reducing towards our long term or mid term ambitions of 39 cost income ratio at the end of the strategic cycle in 2026.
Mr. Venditti, have you finished with your questions?
Yes, thank you very much.
The next question is from the line of Clayton Michael with ZKB. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning all. Thank you very much for having the opportunity to ask a question. I had a question around the buy now, pay later business. Could you provide some indication in terms of how large the organic growth was on an underlying basis, and particularly in terms of Swiss Billing and also by Juno, also whether that organic growth is being stable, is it accelerating, is it decelerating? Also, secondly, on buy now, pay later, how the competitive environment is? Are you finding it easy to onboard new partners, or is it starting to become more complicated, a bit more crowded? And finally, also in terms of performance, are you seeing similar trends overall that the performance is deteriorating, or is it very stable? Thank you.
Yeah, let me just start quickly with the competitive environment, and then Pascal will talk a bit about the growth trends and the performance side. Look, I think, and thanks for the question, Michael. As we've articulated, right, buy now, pay later, embedded finance, one of our clear strategic growth pillars, we continue to see a lot of potential in this field. And we're quite pleased with having made the acquisition and also how the integration of the two businesses is going at this point. And our hypothesis about complementary skills, complementary customer set, geographies, etc., is really coming to fruition, which we're quite happy about. In terms of the environment, I think the launch under Cembra Pay has been very well received in the market. We hear this a lot from existing customers. I also, think our presence is felt even more than it was in the past. And so I think relative to the competitive environment, we're very well positioned to capitalize. Now, you also see some trends that are cyclical in a sense, right? Online traffic or online e-commerce is decreasing a little bit coming out of the pandemic at the expense of more offline POS transactions, and we clearly are extending our presence in both areas to capitalize on that. But I think broadly, right, in terms of competitive environment, I think we're very well positioned. Just let me hand over to Pascal in terms of growth trends and performance.
So look at all the buy now pay later commission and fees increased from 6.5 million last year to 19 million as well for the first 6 months of this year. And the large portions of the contributions or the increase was driven as well by the consolidations of by Juno. We are pleased with both businesses, which now form one as Cembra Pay. Basically, as a way we have seen as both on both sides of the growth, for the continued growth on both sides of the business.
Can you just give some indication in terms of what the underlying growth is? Just so we get a feel in terms of how large the organic growth actually has been year over year.
This is an information so we have not disclosed yet and cannot not.
I think just add though and concur with the comments, Pascal. Right. Look, we've given you guys guidance on where we want to end up with this business, right, in terms of net income contribution, and that guidance is firmly in place, right? And so the 10 to 20 million over the strategic cycle.
Mr. Kleen, have you finished with your questions?
Thank you, yes.
Thank you.
The next question is a follow-up question from the line of Daniel Regli with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Mr. Regli, can you hear us?
Good morning. Yes, here I am. Sorry, I had forgotten to unmute myself. Sorry, I forgot what I wanted to ask. Sorry.
Good, I think.
Apologies. Please go ahead. Yes.
No worries. Look, thanks for participating this morning and the questions and discussion. And as always, happy to extend. You know where to find us. Couple of quick takeaways. Continued robust performance, right, in a challenging environment. I think we're pleased that we've been able to grow the balance sheet in that sense. Solid net revenue growth, right, compensating for the funding rate increases through a mix of interest rate increases. The pricing is in place and it's going to increasingly pay off, as well as fees, particularly from Buy Now, Pay Later. Pleased with the charter transition and Buy Now, Pay Later delivery. Resilient business model as you know it, and we continue to deliver. So thanks again for participating this morning, and have a great day, everyone.